Great. Well, welcome everybody. Thank you very much for sparing the time to listen to our half-year announcement. I'm joined by Steve, Finance Director, and by Peter, our Chairman in the front row, and also various members of the management team, principally from the UK, including our new head of the UK, Gary Saunders, who joined us very recently. Firstly, I should just say health and safety is an extremely important part of the way we operate, and we aren't expecting any fire alarm today, but the main exit is here, so if it goes off, it's real, and we'll all leave in an orderly fashion. First said, when we met about 6 months ago, when I first took over at DS Smith, working with the teams, that I felt that DS Smith had great potential. I knew it then, and we're starting to see some of it today in the half-year results, in O'Toole and how that's performing, but also in the strategy that we outline going forward. And it's all to achieve a group that is less cyclical, higher margins, higher return on capital, and a growing business. One supplying our customers as they grow, not only in our current market, been a really exciting, expanding market going into Eastern Europe. But let me just start with the overview, and I said we'll be in three sections. We'll start with the results. Steve will then take us further into O'Toole and the outlook, and then I'll come back and talk about the strategy and summarise. So in those three areas, frankly, in the first half, we've had a pretty good half year. Our turnover's up. Excluding O'Toole, it's up 5.5%. Volume growth up over 6%. The operating profit is up 19.3%, 10.8% excluding O'Toole. But that return on capital, the principal measure for the company, is up to 10.9%, 170 basis point improvement. Our free cash flow, 121% improvement, 18 pence per share. EPS up 31.8%, and on the back of that, as a first move towards our dividend policy, we've raised the dividend by 33%. And O'Toole is an absolutely super business with a super management team and a tremendous customer base. The underlying trading is performing better than we expected. The synergies will be greater than we expected, and they will be delivered earlier. We have completed our business strategy review, which we will outline later on, and say that current trading since the half year is progressing well, fully in line with our expectations, and we're confident on the second half of the current year. Steve.
Good morning all. Miles said, I'm Steve Dryden, I'm the Group Finance Director of DS Smith. So there's five key themes that you'll see in terms of the results for the first half of the year. We've got growth, we've got cost recovery, returns are better, cash is good, and O'Toole is performing well. In terms of growth, we've gained share across most of our markets. We've actually grown our packaging volume by 6.2%. There's a cost recovery. We've had some huge cost increases in the first half. We've recovered nearly 100%. I'll show you that later. In terms of returns, we've improved our return on sales by 20 basis points to 5.2%. That's okay. Return on capital, we've improved that by 170 basis points to 10.9%. Free cash flow, we've more than doubled our free cash flow in the first half. Our free cash flow per share, as Miles said, is 18 pence. Lastly, O'Toole. It's traded above our expectations. It's integrating very well into the overall DS Smith group. And we've raised the synergy target to 10.3 million euros. So if we look at the results for the first 6 months, revenue and profit are up 15 and 19% respectively. And the next two slides really bridge that performance for you. Our adjusted earnings per share is up 31.8%. Free cash flow, £75 million, 121% increase. Net debt, it has only increased by £106 million. And in the context of that, you should remember that in the first half, we bought OTOR for a net £150 million. Return on capital. Yeah, it's great to see it go up to 10.9%, but our cost of capital is 11.8%, and we are absolutely committed to exceeding that. Finally, the dividend, 2 pence, up 33% compared to the 1.5 pence for the interim dividend for last year. What this does, this bridges the revenue for last year of £1 billion through to the revenue for the first half of £1.2 billion. Price recovery in the first half, £76.4 million. Organic volume growth is £42 million. And if you take that, spices is our office products is largely flat. That's obviously all in our packaging business, and that's where the 6.2% volume growth comes from. Acquisitions, less disposals, is £44.3 million. And in there, OTOR, that delivered £49 million worth of revenue in our first 2 months of ownership. Lastly, foreign exchange translation pulled back the result by £7 million. So we finished the first half, £1.2 billion of revenue. So similar format to revenue, this is our operating profit bridge. Again, last year 50.7 million, this year 60.5 million. As for the last slide, we raised our prices by £76 million. And compared to cost increases of £77 million, this is an absolutely great result. We raised our prices quickly. Volume growth, the profit effect of that volume growth was £7.5 million. Acquisitions, disposals, that was a net £3.9 million. It's important to look behind that, because you'll see in terms of OTORS, the acquisition side, delivered £4.3 million, and that's an 8.8% return on sales. Foreign exchange pulled back the results slightly by £2 million. We finished the result at £60.5 million. In a sense, when you look at this, you can see how important it is that we can actually get cost recovery, and we can get cost recovery quickly. We feel that market leadership on service, quality, innovation, that means that DS Smith is a price maker. So this is our divisional performance for the first 6 months, which some of the gentlemen in the room from DS Smith absolutely helped deliver. You can see in terms of the top left for UK paper and corrugated, grew our revenue 23%, our profits by 33%. Paper, we raised our prices quickly to more than recover our costs. Sheet feeding, we recovered our costs again quickly, but we also managed to gain share with excellent levels of service. On the top right, in our continental European corrugated business, this includes the benefit of 2 months of OTOR's results. So we grew the volume, but in terms of the base corrugated business, we didn't recover the input cost quickly enough, and hence the underlying profits here are below last year. We also obviously have a cost recovery program to set out and recover those. On plastics, we grew revenue and profits, I guess, modestly, but it's quite interesting. We did some great work on consistently keeping the working capital down. We disposed of a small business that was quite asset intensive. So when you actually look, we've actually improved the return on capital by 490 basis points. It's a great result. Lastly, in terms of office products, or spices on the bottom left, revenue and profits broadly flat in constant currency. We continued to make good progress on the continent, but the UK business remains challenging. Again, good work on working capital in terms of sustainable reductions means that with level profits, we've actually managed to improve the return on capital by 230 basis points. I show showed you the totals of the pricing and the cost recovery, but it's ever so interesting to look at the detail behind. You know, waste paper of £31 million. You know, that's a 49% increase in cost. On paper, to a lesser extent, polymer, £39 million. Again, 47% increase on cost. And lastly, energy up £7 million. And you can see there, on the right-hand side, how we raised our prices across the group. And nearly 100% recovered. Again, I feel the key to good cost recovery is service, quality, and innovation. Again, here's the detail behind what is, I think, in the first half, an excellent cash flow performance. EBITDA, it's up £8.9 million. Working capital, despite the revenue growth, we achieved an inflow of £15.3 million. And we are focusing on sustainably reducing our working capital. So free cash flow more than doubled to £75 million. We spent £196 million on the acquisition of OTOR. That's less the disposal of a small packaging business in Turkey. Finally, net debt to EBITDA. That's really how the banks judge our strength. That remained at 1.7 times, same ratio as this time last year. On pension, we feel that we're taking actions that reduce the risk that the pension scheme poses to the group. As you're aware, there's two methods to value the pension scheme. There's IFRS 19, that's how we report in our accounts. I show that on the right there. Gross deficit, £200 million. After tax, the deficit's about £143 million. Second method is the actuarial valuation. This is how the trustees assess the deficit and when they discuss the level of cash payments required from the group as part of a recovery plan. So the latest actuarial valuation is now being finalised, and the trustees have, in principle, decided to close the scheme to future accrual and move the inflation link from RPI to CPI. Together, these should reduce the actuarial deficit and the accounting deficit by circa £80 million. We've also reached agreement with the trustees to repay the reduced actuarial deficit, which is £178 million, over 10 years. So this will involve a payment this year of £22 million and lower payments thereafter of £14.8 million, rising by 2% per annum thereafter. The ongoing P&L impact, that'd be cost neutral with a defined contribution scheme replacing the current defined benefit scheme. I'm sure you'll all agree, with a pro forma deficit, net deficit of circa £85 million, the actions we've taken here have significantly reduced the risk that the pension scheme poses to DS Smith. So as Miles mentioned, OTOR, it's delivering well. You know, the performance in the first 2 months of our ownership is better than expected. I particularly draw your attention to the 8.8% return on sales. What are we pleased about? The customer and the commercial reaction has been excellent. We've actually found some exciting revenue growth opportunities with 10 new customers in 6 countries that DS Smith operates in today. And it's integrating well into the overall DS Smith group. And lastly, we've raised the cost synergies by €1 million to €10.3 million. So finally, the outlook. If despite input costs, which are continuing to increase, trading in the second half to date is progressing well. OTOR is trading well, with more cost synergies coming through earlier. And therefore, we look forward to the remainder of the year with confidence, delivering in line with our expectations.
Thank you. So you've covered the half-year results, OTOR and the outlook. Now come to the work that many people have been involved in within DS Smith. I know I say about strategy, frankly their fancy thinking is 20% of it. It's the implementation We could have written out the strategy and put it in an envelope and sent it to all our shareholders a few months ago. You've got to get people behind it to believe it, to know what they're trying to do, what they're part of it, so you can deliver against it. And in this presentation, we're running through what we intend to do, but we'll also be giving you the key metrics by which we expect to be judged over the current years. And the reason we can do that is because of the ownership that's within Dear Smith to achieve this plan. So the background. As I said when I started, a clear vision about Dear Smith providing more consistent growth, better margins, higher returns with less cyclicality. I want to deliver this not only for the group, but for our shareholders and our customers and employees as well. So in summary, we want Dear Smith to be the leading supplier of recycled packaging for consumer goods. When I say leading, I don't mean part of it, I mean leading the category. It's such an exciting, vibrant category with wonderful customers. To own the category, the supplier of choice, to be developing with our customers as they move into new markets. And so we will build the packaging and the recycling business, not only in our existing markets, but into these new markets coming into Central and Eastern Europe. And we will reduce our paper capacity going forwards, where it is not aligned to our packaging business. And we'll streamline the group so we can come behind the end market. So the group is focused on delivering to those customers. And when you have that alignment, the different parts of the divisions build on each other. So one division plus the next, it doesn't equal three, but it equals five. That's the value of a group, and that's what we're going to deliver. And in that alignment, you'll also see we'll be able to take out significant structural costs in the group, as well as release working capital, driving the returns to shareholders. But it's only possible if we engage all of our staff in delivering this company. So we're focused on that as well. Let's just come in. You've got to start with the market. What's the market doing? The market's with you. With growth, you've got opportunity. And here it is. This is just one example. And it is shelf-ready packaging for consumer goods. I think, personally, I get quite excited about these products. It makes it look great. It's on the shelves. When you're going home tonight, just pop into your Tesco on the way home. It's bound to be one near you. And look at how the products are presented. That's part of the selling proposition, and that's what we're talking about. So why does it work so well? Well, in summary, there are really three elements to it. Firstly, for the retailers, and then for our customers, the FMCG businesses. And putting it bluntly, with the retailers, it takes out a lot of cost. When you see the growth of the large retailers growing not only in our current markets, but across Europe, they have to get more sales out of their stores. That means they've got to reload the shelves more quickly. So the large retailers are driving the use of this packaging. They put that into the FMCG companies who are our companies. So it's a growing format, taking out costs from the retailer. And of course, it's fully recyclable. This cardboard is collected from the store, made into new paper, and then made into new boxes. So it hits all the environmental credentials that the FMCG companies and the major retailers need as well. And lastly, but by no means least, it's part of the selling proposition. If you look here, I mean, this is one example, this is crisps. You can see that it takes up a significant part of the product. In some other categories, the packaging can be up to a third of the fascia. That means it's part of the selling proposition. So as a supplier, you're related to the sale and the margin the FMCG company is making. That's where the value is. That's where the profit is for us. So why is it growing? Well, the market is growing steadily at GDP plus. Our volumes are exceeding GDP. in Western Europe and in Eastern Europe. Now, why is that? Well, the major retailers are growing. They're taking share. You look at Tesco's last set of results. The like-for-like in the UK was 1.5%, but the actual was 8%. They're taking share. They've got a GDP plus growth, not only because of the retailers, but because of that environmental solution as well. So this packaging is growing with the retailers, and it's taking share from other formats. And they're good margins in here. And they're good margins because of the added value that the product gives. It is part of the selling proposition. And by the selling, it has the advertising, it has the promotion, it has the colours, it has the design. That means differentiation, that means complexity, and frankly, that means margins for us because we're adding value. And to address the issue of cyclicality, as we're linked to the FMCG suppliers, the volumes have only been going up. Most Western European markets have been in some sort of recession, but not corrugated packaging for FMCG companies. It's only been growing. So because people don't stop eating and drinking, we don't get the variability in demand, which addresses one of our principal issues, the cyclicality. And there are attractive acquisition opportunities, particularly in the fragmented or more fragmented Eastern European markets. And on the left-hand side, on the right-hand side of this graph, you can see where Carrefour is in their use of shelf-ready packaging as a percentage of their total lines, catching up with Tesco at 53%, and Tesco are growing as well. It's a key part of their strategy. So this market is growing steadily at GDP plus. And we're going to build on our customers' growth. These are some of our principal customers. So if you think Procter & Gamble, if you think Reckitt Benckiser, if you think Lactalis, Danone, think Dear Smith, because we're with them all the way. So building on those customer links into Central and Eastern Europe, we do have a market there with the growing middle classes, more affluent population. Affluence drives consumption. The retailers are growing there. Average compound growth rate for Tesco in Eastern Europe or Auchan, it's been over 7%. Supplying more affluent markets, FMCG companies moving there to supply the markets but also using the lower cost base. So it's seeing significant growth opportunity. And on the right hand side of the graph you can see the consumption of corrugated in Central and Eastern Europe, 104 million people waiting to be supplied with this sort of format. 104 million people at less than 60% of their consumption in Western Europe. With the growing retailers and the growing FMCG customers, that means sustained opportunity to grow, and we want to be the leading player in that market. So how are we going to deliver that market opportunity, which I'm sure you'll all agree is very exciting? So on the winning strategy, let's just look at the business today. And Dear Smith is in five principal businesses, recycling, where we have a fleet of over 600 vehicles in the UK. They go and visit every single Tesco store, some of them daily, to pick up the corrugated board. Visit Morrison, Sainsbury, Next, Asda, all the major retailers picking up the waste board and taking it to our mills. That's the recycling business. And we show here, we then have paper, which is producing packaging, paper, but also other grades as well. We produce envelopes, bags, products for the building industry, etc. Our corrugated packaging is the main, it's the main part of the group in the packaging. We then have plastics packaging and the wholesale products wholesaling. And we divide each of these into those which reduce the cyclicality, those that improve the cost of capital, and those that have synergy with the packaging business, so you build a value-adding group. And you can see from this the recycling gets a double tick in each column. Paper, it's a well-run business. But the cyclicality is something that we just can't control. This is the history of the paper industry. You see, going forward, that will not change. And therefore, it has a high cost of capital, and it has some synergy with the packaging, but many of its products don't when they're not aligned to it. On plastic packaging, it does have synergy, it improves the cost of capital, and its cyclicality is good. Office products wholesaling is a good business, but it drives up our cost of capital, and it has no synergies. So therefore, we're going to grow the packaging business. We're going to grow the recycling business that supports the packaging. It supports it because our customers want to know, our customers, Danone, Unilever, want to know that we own the source of the fibre. And they also want to know that nothing that they produce will go to landfill. We give them that guarantee to the retailer where we pick it up. Nothing goes to landfill, a fully sustainable solution, aligned with the packaging business. And we're going to grow those. You can see the circle's a little bit larger than the earlier circle. And we're seeing that we'll be reducing paper. And this is how we'll grow with our customers. It's a delight to work with the businesses throughout DS Smith. But we have two really powerful positions in the UK and France today, where we really do lead the market in corrugated packaging. And it gives us such a wonderful position with our customers, many of them based in these countries, and they're using their base in these countries to grow into Eastern Europe. And we highlight here our positions in Eastern Europe today. We have a good position in Poland, Czech, Hungary, and we own 49.6% of a business in Ukraine, which is clearly the market leader in that country with over 30% market share. We're going to use those positions to support our growth. But then how do we make sure we're paid for our services? Well, our customers are very, very demanding, and they're demanding on service quality, innovation, environment. This is how we can differentiate ourselves. When we come onto service, it is about order lead times. It's about thinking as our customers think, supplying the needs that they have, on time, in full deliveries. We are not there today, but we will be there. And that will drive service into our customers that they want and expect. In quality, the same quality, whether you're in Russia, Ukraine, Poland, Czech, Hungary, Slovakia, Germany, France, UK. The name Cadbury, kind of a different colour. It comes out of a different typeface. It's got to be exactly the same, and we will guarantee that to our customers. And on innovation, this is such an exciting area. We put down here our flute. It's a fluting that we have developed. Nobody else has it. It offers a 20% reduction over the next nearest grade in terms of the amount of paper used for the same strength of box with a wonderful print face, a wonderful finish on which to print. That is exclusive to DS Smith. And in the environment, our fully recycled offering. Again, in the UK, we are the only supplier who offers this. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about it because it's so powerful. 14 days box to box. We pick up the box from the retailer that's been used. It goes to our paper mill, it's converted into paper. It then goes back to the box manufacturer, Procter's, Nestle, etc., and then back to the retailer. 14 days, I think the best we do is about 12. It's absolutely unbeatable for those customers with nothing to landfill. So we'll be focused on packaging, but as I said, we have plastics packaging, which does have synergy with the corrugated business. A lot of the bags and taps fit inside the corrugated box. Great level of service and innovation coming through. Defined niches, good returns. We're happy with that business. It's going to continue growing. Nothing good to stay at a modest level. And on office products wholesaling, there is no synergy with the rest of the group. We are and will continue to strengthen the management team there, and we are driving improvements in its profitability, and we will maximise shareholder value from that investment. So that's all about the top line and about the business mix, which is all very important and actually very exciting. Let's just come down to some hard ways of how we work and operate internally, how we can be more efficient. This is the old structure within the group, and you'll see, makes me look rather busy, where I have a number of reports, which isn't a problem in itself. The only issue is that each business operates completely independently of the other. So they have their own procurement, their own finance, their own HR, their own logistics, their own everything. Completely autonomous. And the head office functions are exactly that. They are just head office functions. So we're now moving to a new business structure where we have across group functions. Firstly, on procurement, we have recruited an interim head of procurement. He has started. He is building that team, and we're very excited about the opportunities. In HR, we're building group-wide competencies, which I'll talk more about later. On finance and legal, Steve leads this, and we'll be creating a group-wide finance function, so a report at the same stands throughout the group. And customer management, to service those customers that we have, to manage them on a pan-European basis, the way they work, to get more revenue synergies out of that base, we're creating a European-wide management function. And that will give a more integrated group. It will improve our service, our speed to market, and we will take 10 million of structural costs out of our structure. And in addition to that, we will achieve significant savings in procurement. But let's come on to the alignment of our staff. You know, and it's an absolute pleasure to work with the group. It's a super group. It's where the potential comes from. We've got a lot of skilled, hard-working, dedicated employees. We have over 12,000 of them. But we do have to align them with the group's objectives. And on the alignment, it's not just the easier things about communication, effective two-way communication. It is about ensuring we have very clearly defined competencies, group-wide. We're developing them, and we are very advanced. A system of a group-wide appraisal. Less than 50% of our staff today have appraisals. In the future, everybody will have an appraisal in a standard way, a chance to work with their line manager. I believe it's a fundamental part of effective performance management and a talent management process, so that when we grow and expand, we're going to take the people from within DS Smith. We've got 12,000 of them. So we're building on our existing competencies. Opinion surveys at MESDIS, we've undertaken our first one, and the results are very exciting in terms of how we can improve that. And we have already put in, for the first time, a remuneration system that's linked not just to profit, but to a return on capital. We've got to be hitting both targets. We believe that this will start to align all of our employees with our shareholders and our customers' interests as well. But all this sounds great, but I stress we're building on what we have. We have a hard-working, dedicated set of employees, and I think we can improve their engagement and alignment. On the management team, we've made a number of changes. We have recruited a new head of the UK. He has started already. I introduced him earlier. His name's Gary Saunders. We have a new head of France who ran the O'Toole business, and all of our French businesses are going into that. We have a new head of Central and Eastern Europe, some of whom the company's been appointed. And we also have a new head of procurement. So four key management positions in place. We already have a tremendous customer relationships. We want to grow with those customers, built on the expertise that's already in the group. So we believe we can effectively manage the risk of implementing our strategy. So I'm sure you're all interested in the financial profile, how it all looks. This is what we're ultimately here for. And the first thing is this issue of cyclicality. Do you believe the forecasts that are out there for DS Smith Do you think we're going to make them? Or is something going to come along that's going to knock us off? Well, the first thing, the cause of that cyclicality, the principal reason behind the company's performance over the last years has been the paper cycle. And I said, we will exit 250,000 tonnes of non-integrated production. And in packaging, we think we can improve this. We will put more focus and more growth behind the FMCG businesses. Their volumes don't go down. That's been our experience. That's where we are today. And that's our forecast. People still eat and drink. We're also changing the way we contract with those customers, moving from having longer term contracts to shorter term contracts, so we can cope with movements in raw material costs. There will be a lag, but if the contracts are shorter, we'll have far greater visibility of the recovery of those margins. You've already seen that in the half year, the work that's gone on. And we know this works, because that's the way OTOR work. It works for them, it'll work for us. And we'll be improving the mix and growing the recycling business, which has no cyclicality. And coming on, we've talked a lot about the return on capital, our principal measure, how effectively are we using the capital that's entrusted to us. I believe, again, it's a fundamental competency every company has to use capital sparingly and efficiently. So we will be improving working capital. Our turnover's gone up, more material's gone up, our working capital came down in the half year. And we think we can make further improvements there. We have over 200 million of stock and over 400 million of debtors. The modulus of our numbers are very high. That's getting a lot of focus. Steve has a few targets. And the capital will be invested strategically. And in easy words, what we mean here is we'll be putting capital, not just for the payback, but behind the businesses we really want to be in, invest capital behind strategic objectives and not just short-term paybacks. They deliver sustainable shareholder value, growing shareholder value, not just a few quick wins by allocating capital to problems. It's a fundamental principle of driving long-term shareholder value. And we'll reduce the cost of capital by reducing the amount of paper and about growing the recycling and packaging businesses, both of which have cost of capital significantly below the 11.8% for the group. So how does it all look when you look together? Good organic growth, higher margins and returns. They're saying for the current business, we should be getting like-for-like volume growth of 3%. We had over 6% in the half year for packaging. Our return on sales in the first half, just over 5%. We think we can drive it consistently to between 6 and 8%. Our return on capital have made an improvement, but to earn sustainably above our cost of capital each and every year between 12 and 15%, adding shareholder value and driving down the cost of capital as we improve the mix of business. You've seen how we've managed capital in terms of the indebtedness on the group. They can be confident that the dividends will be paid and we'll maintain net debt to EBITDA below 2x. We have done that already with the acquisition of OTOR. And about converting profit into cash, excluding growth capital expenditure, the conversion will be in excess of 120%. Consistent GDP plus growth, reduced cyclicality, higher margins and returns above our cost of capital. And how do you see it in the dividend? Well, ultimately it's about delivering good earnings growth. And our dividend policy says it'd be progressive. To us that means it doesn't go down. And we'll target an average dividend cover over the cycle of between 2 and 2.5 times. And the increase of 33% in the interim dividend is the first move towards that. So in conclusion, we're pleased with the half year results. Things have gone well for us. Our markets have grown. Our customers want us to work with them and we support them in that. OTOR we're very pleased with. Let's see where it can go in the future with our backing. Since the year-end, trading's gone well. It's in line with our expectations. We have confidence about the full year. The review of strategy is completed and is owned by the management teams, communicated and owned in the company. We'll be outlining the next stage of this strategy in more detail at a Capital Markets Day on the 10th of March, which everybody's invited to. So in summary, I think this plan delivers consistent growth at GDP plus, lower cyclicality, higher returns, sustainably above the cost of capital. And for us, the future is recycled packaging for consumer goods. Thank you. Now, happy to take any questions with Steve, any subject you may have.
Morning, Will Wyman at Goldman's. Firstly, on the 250,000 tonnes of capacity exits in paper, to what extent do you expect that to be disposals, and to what extent could it be closures of capacity? And then second, also on disposals, should we expect office products business to be disposed of at some point? Is that plan A?
On the paper business, we're working through that, and I think it'll be a combination of both, and we're going through exactly how we do that, etc. And we'll come back and outline more about that. But we're quite clear as to where we want to go, but it's obviously difficult unless you've actually got a particular buyer who's actually there today to say definitively. Office products, it's sort of the elephant in the room, isn't it? And with office products, you know, we have a business there that we're going to improve the performance on, but we'll run it to maximise shareholder value. And the principal focus of the group will be in recycled packaging for consumer goods, and will become streamlined behind that. But today we are focused on getting the very best out of the office products business with the new management teams which we've put in place.
Thanks. Can I ask another question just on cost recovery? You highlighted the difference between UK, where you had very, very strong cost recovery, and Europe. Is there any reason why there might have been slightly less price progression in Europe, or is it simply yet to come through? Is it coming through next?
It's just coming through. You know, we put a lot of focus in this area. Pricing has to be driven, you know, really from our senior management, etc. And it's all coming through. We hope in the future it will be more in line with the change in raw material costs.
Great, thanks.
Rob, did you ask?
Thank you. Robert Owens, JP Morgan Cav. Couple of questions. The first on OTOR and the additional synergies you're targeting there. Can you maybe provide a bit more colour on that?
Yeah. If you remember back in July, we said we hope to get 9.3 million of cost synergies. There's revenue synergies on top, but 9.3 million of cost synergies. We've raised that to 10.3 million. I think in July in the questioning, someone said, how much are you going to get this year? We said about €1 million. I think we'll get about €1.5 million, maybe a little bit more than that this year. Where's it coming from? There's things we've found that's new, is basically running some of the transport systems more efficiently, since of how we dispatch product out to our customers. We found a little bit more in terms of on the buying side, not the paper side, but just on buying a whole range of products, just looking at what's the best price between DS Smith and OTOR, and OTOR's good at some, and DS Smith is better at others, and just by levelling those out.
Thanks. And then just to follow up on the Ukrainian associate, do you have any update on when we might see that on the balance sheet, what we need to see happening there to recognise that? That'd be great.
Okay, I'll choose my words carefully, because one or two of the lenders to our Ukrainian business are in the room today. Welcome. It's a great business, you know, 30% market share, 45 million people, it's profitable, generating cash, it's a good business, just have a very poor financing structure, so local currency earnings and dollar debt is a classic. So we breached covenants, therefore we fully impaired the asset. We are in negotiations with the banks for a new set of covenants. Once we've reached agreement on there, and those negotiations are going well to date, we would then be able to look at the carrying value of that asset, and ultimately then it would come back at our balance sheet. It's very much about making sure we reach agreement with our lenders before we could look to do that.
Great, thank you.
Morning, Michael O'Brien, Colin Stewart. Two questions from me. Just firstly, on the structural cost savings, what's the timing of those in terms of falling into this year or next year?
The timing is going to be more next year, and this is the thing that would outline more in our capital markets day, exactly how and when, etc. We know they're there.
Okay, and secondly, is it too early to give people a feel for just how big the benefits are in terms of both procurement and working capital reduction to come?
Again, we're giving people very much a flavour of the things we're focusing on. I mean, we wouldn't put them there unless we felt that there were some decent money to be had out of it. And again, on this capital markets day, we'll just outline more about that. But, you know, we've already seen a taster in the half year. Let's see where we get to and outline more of that next year.
It's Harry Phillips at Evolution. Couple of questions, please. Again, just coming back to the paper situation, is that solely a UK issue, or are you looking at France as part of that process as well?
In summary, there is an overcapacity of paper on the continent in Central and Western Europe. It's quite a fragmented industry. A lot of privately owned businesses in there, and capacity exceeds demand. And we've done a lot of work on this, looking at the forecast, and we see that situation continuing. That the group will not be investing in new capacity for the foreseeable future in Western and Central Europe. Our current position in Central and Western Europe is that if we look at, say, France, we have very, very limited capacity there. It's absolutely de minimis. In the UK, the market's slightly different in that there's very little independent capacity, and we will be retaining and therefore running properly and efficiently our large mill in Kemsley in Kent, as there is no free capacity. So without that, we'll be significantly disadvantaged. So in France, it's absolutely de minimis what we have. In the UK, we'll be really focusing behind Kemsley and aligning it with the packaging business.
And then secondly, in terms of Severnside and entering Europe, and instinct would suggest that's got to be through an acquisition to give you a platform,
yeah.
Or do you ride on the back of the FMCG?
It's a really good question. We have really, and the head of recycling is in the audience there today, Peter McGuinness. We have a really very unique position there, in that virtually all of our people who are also in that business really have quite a different model. They won't guarantee nothing to landfill. They operate really quite differently. And the thing about the Severnside business and why it has 100% of Tesco's business is it because it can give that guarantee. So if there are businesses out there that offer that, then we'll look, an acquisition would be interesting. I have to say, I think our primary opportunity is organic. We've got the business model, we've got the system, we've got the people, we've got the marketplace, we've got the customer wants us. So let's see what we can do with that first, because it really is quite unique, and it's therefore really very exciting. And we want to set it up properly to begin with. So we're looking at a number of options, but I think that seems the major opportunity.
Would it be logical to think that France would be a start point given the broader model you have there?
Yeah. I mean, if you're confident in your model, you work with a number of customers, they all work at different speeds, so you have various irons in the fire, and that's certainly one that could be the first one. But, we've had a good look at the model, talked to our customers, various things going on there. We're confident we will expand it. Exactly how and the speed we'll be coming back on. But France is certainly on the list.
Thanks a lot.
Hi, Don O'Neill from NCB Stockbrokers. Just a couple of questions. The first one, you've said there's a lot of attractive opportunities in terms of growth in Eastern Europe, Central Eastern Europe. Could you expand on exactly where those opportunities are and maybe what sort of scope you have or what sort of capacity you have to invest, how much you might think you might invest given the sort of growth in free cash flow? And secondly, maybe just in terms of the overall market, your outlook in terms of input costs and your ability to pass through pricing into H1 and H2 2011.
Yeah, on. I'm very reluctant to go and give a number. We could spend X, frankly. Here's the dynamics. It is a fragmented market. I think it's something that we have competence in terms of the service, the quality, the innovation that we can take out across Europe. And I think the interesting thing is the FMCG customers from Western Europe are going out to Central and Eastern Europe, and there's a clear demand there. We think DS Smith can identify opportunities and actually add real value in terms of obviously scale and buying, but more importantly in terms of commercial synergies. So if we can see attractive opportunities, I'm absolutely sure with the track record that we showed in terms of the ability to raise funds, bank money, we did on Otor and the delivery on Otor that we're starting to demonstrate to you, that you know, we'll be able to look at acquisition opportunities out there. We are a cash generative business model. You can see the scale at which we're paying down debt. You know, we've got our own internally generated funds as well.
Just in terms of the market, the input costs
continue to rise. Waste paper costs, there's pressure on waste paper costs. Just to remind you all, it is a global market. You have a choice in China whether you take out the North America or out of Western Europe. China, developing world, has continued to grow faster than those two regions, so waste paper costs are increasing. That's fine. You know, that's a pressure we face. Our issue is we've got to make sure our business model, as we've demonstrated, we can recover those costs, but also we can recover them quickly.
Thank you.
Morning, Ross Gilardi from Merrill Lynch. I just had a question on your return on capital employed objective, the 12-15%. Does that assume that Spicer's remains in the portfolio? Might that goal change if it doesn't? Because it's clearly, while it may have a higher cost of capital, it's also got a higher return on capital right now.
Yeah. Those targets are for the existing structure of the group. That's what we are in different parts of the group, have obviously slightly different dynamics in there, but it's return on sales, return on capital, etc.
And then just to follow up, what you've announced on the pension today, does that increase your flexibility in what you might be able to do with the office products business? Because I was under the impression that there was an issue where you might have to make a cash injection into the pension if you were to sell it.
In terms of legislation, there's obviously legislation that says if you dispose of a large part of the business, you have to apportion the deficit into there. So frankly, that falls away, but equally, you know, we'd have a constructive discussion with the trustees that we have done and what's the best use of that funds. Is some of it going into paying down the deficit further? Is some of it being reinvested into acquisitions like Otor? So I think that's something that's best judged at the time, but certainly moving to closure removes that statutory Section 75 obligation, but we still have obligations to the trustees and commitments in terms of discussing it from the best use of any proceeds should we ever decide to dispose of the business.
And is spinning the business off even an option, or is it too small?
I think we should focus on business improvements. We talked about management team driving improvement and maximise value and not necessarily be thinking about sale or spinning at this point in time.
Thank you.
Peter Bennett, JNF. This isn't a sort of numbers or quantitative thing, and it may be a bit difficult to answer, but if you could ad lib a little bit. Bits of what I'm after is how you actually do it. First of all, when you got there, was there a big culture change necessary? Two, did you have to bring in a lot of outsiders for your top management changes? Three, a day in the life of, say, you. How much do you sort of go down the managerial scale in personally getting to know you know, various levels of management? It's a rather vague question, but you can see what I'm getting at. So how does it work? Because lots of people can make all these plans. I know it's worked because I followed you in McBride. It would be nice to know how actually you set about it. Thank you.
No, when I have the answer on, you'll be the first to know. You know, look, I mean, I just, again, with J. Smith, I knew it when I was, when I had my first sort of discussions a year ago with Peter, our chairman. The group has a lot of potential. There's no doubt it has some great market positions, has a lot of very hard-working and dedicated people. The issue for Dear Smith is about focus. And what are you really here to do? You know, what is the end market? And then how are we going to service that and all come behind it? And you know what? You just have to go around and talk to people. Just listen to them. Go and talk to your customers. You just go and talk to them. They'll soon tell you. Actually, you go to the lines and you're talking to the guys, you know, what are the issues you've got? They just tell you, this is what we mean by engagement, listening. And I say to managers, you know, keep your mouth shut and keep your eyes and ears open and get out there. So I've been to 46 sites since I've been there. And everyone you hold, you know, a chat with people and where are things going. And frankly, it just starts to come out. But the beauty is there are a lot of hard-working, skilled people in the company. It's a privilege to work with them. The issue for Dear Smith is focus. And they're getting everybody behind it and being very clear about what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. And sometimes, you know, you can be really quite delighted by the response. And I think we're seeing some of that. And I feel very strongly that there's plenty more to come.
Thanks. It's Miles Allsop from UBS. Just a few quick questions. With these targets for return on capital employed, for EBIT, for sales, you don't give us a time expectation. Is it feasible that you'll be within these ranges in the next 12 months? Are you talking sort of 2 to 3 years to get there? That's the first question.
I think on a sustainable basis that people really think they're in there and that. Not just a short term. After delivering it and getting a recognition for that, I think we're probably talking the next 2 to 3 years to achieve both of those. It's interesting, and you can do the maths. You just add in O'Toole for the whole of the second half and you see where you get to. The businesses are there. The targets are fully achievable. Let's see how fast we progress.
And just going back to that working capital, and we've seen a 15 million inflow in the first half. It sounds like you're expecting more of an inflow in the second half. And how much more is there to jump at over the next 2 years? I guess it's a question for Steve.
Well, that's sort of between my objectives with Miles and myself, frankly, which have been set. The key thing is we've just got to keep making sustainable improvements. You could see this, to me, the 200 million of inventory, is particularly when you saw the chart of recycling to paper to packaging. You know, if we hold inventory, that effectively we are managing for our internal customers. We've got to really go after areas like that. And at the end of the day, there's an overall target. Effectively, some of that's in the cash generation that we've got in there in terms of the operating cash generation ratio. So you'll see that come out, but I don't really want to get into it. We'll deliver X by the end of this year.
But we should expect an inflow in the second half?
Yeah.
And on your management incentivization, you're saying that it's EBIT and return on capital employed as the targets. Are they the same targets as the 6 to 8% and 12 to 15%?
It depends where you are, and some of them are considerably higher. We have to expect incentivization at the top level, it's quite a bit higher. You wouldn't expect anything. You see the targets that are set for us, or public. We're not here to call over the line and say hooray. We're here to.
And is there a 3-year program where you have
absolutely
a big kicker in terms of bonuses?
Absolutely.
And stuff? So.
Absolutely.
And are they published? You say your target.
They are for us.
Yeah.
They are for us.
Okay, I'll look at those later.
We don't publish them internally.
Okay. And on the pension and the cash payments, you're saying 22 million this year, and then 15 million increasing by 2%. Is that pre the service payment? So there's another 7 million on top of that.
Yeah, if you think of the deficit, we were paying, sorry, in total, we're paying 15.6, 8.1 million was service, 7.5 million was deficit reduction. So some of the comments we made about the being cost neutral. This is a risk reduction, not a cost saving exercise. It's risk reduction. So effectively, the service cost on the DB broadly becomes the service cost on the defined contribution scheme, and then the cash payments deficit reduction goes from 7.5 to 22 million this year, but then 14.8 million, 2%, and that will repay the deficit on a 10-year recovery plan.
Okay, so we should be looking on this year, sort of around 30 million, then 23 million going forward.
No, 22 million this year deficit reduction.
Plus the 8 million.
Yes,
cash.
You should see that has been consistent last year, this year, year after, and we focus on the deficit reduction number.
Okay,
that's what we want to do.
Perfect. On the dividend as well, you're saying this is the first step. Are these steps going to be 6 monthly, where we start seeing you get closer to your 2 to 2.5 times cover, or is this kind of, I mean, is it 1/3, 2/3, we expect 6p this year and maybe 7p next year and then finally up to 8p? In sort of 3 years' time, how quickly are you going to get back within that range for the dividend?
We set out the policy, progressive, average between 2 and 2.5. Our earnings are up 32%, and we've increased the dividend 33%. The board will make the decision in for the full year and subsequent years when it makes those decisions. But we have a very clear policy as to where we want to get to, and shareholders should see the increase as a first step towards that.
Okay, and how long is medium term to get to?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the policy, you know, we're talking over the next 3 years. You know, when we talk medium term, we're really talking about the next 3 years, something like that.
Maybe one last question as well on the market itself. Mm. Obviously, you've managed to push prices up to recover the costs. How much more do you expect box prices to move up over the next 6 months? Are we at the end of that cost recovery process?
Mm.
And also, I mean, the other thing that's kind of niggling me in the back of my mind is the Saica machine that's not that far around the corner.
Yeah.
How concerned are you about that and how that impacts specifically the UK market?
Mm. I think, you know, we've seen the price of waste fibre double over the last year. This is our primary source of our raw material, and it's doubled. We've seen oil, was it 91, 92 at the moment, increase. You've seen worldwide demand for commodities increase. Personally, you know, none of us have a crystal ball, but it's not going to stop. It's going to carry on increasing, and there'll be an ever more sort of ferocious marketplace for these sorts of commodities. That's a personal view. So do I think we've seen the last of the box price increase? Absolutely not. Now, they may go down in the short term and then back up in a year or two. But over the next few years, I think the economies in general will see more inflation coming through on raw material costs. The issue for us, I'm going to sound sort of a glib about it, but I'm less concerned about that. I'm more concerned about our service quality and innovation. How can we move customers into our food? It saves 20%. So you've got to start thinking about value engineering and how you can get the same solution for using less raw material. How can you recycle more? At the moment, the average box has been around 8 times. Well, how can we make that 9? How can we start to improve our process to drive more recycling, more reuse? And that's where the real value is. So I'm concerned about, yes, we've got a raw material, but it's what of our customers think? How are we adding value to them? Service, quality, innovation. If we lead that, then we'll be absolutely fine. And we've got some wonderful practice. And that's actually the answer to your second question. If people want to put more into paper, into an oversupplied market, where there is huge cyclicality, bring it on. We are very short in paper. Very short.
In the UK, you're long. I mean, that's to worry, I suppose. But after that's
one market. That's one market we're in. You know, if people want to build more capacity, it is an international market. There are some transport costs, but for the group overall, we are very short in paper. I think compared to some other people who supply in this market, that is a bit of a unique position, where typically other companies have much more paper and continue to invest in it, but that is not where we see shareholder value. It's as simple as that, you know, and over time we'll know which business model will work.
Hi, I'm Sanjay Mistry of West LB. I just got a question regarding page 46 on this slide. It has current capex of 70 to 75 million, previous of 55. I was just wondering what the difference relates to.
That's the guidance. The 55 is the guidance we gave back in June pre-OTOR.
Mm-hmm.
When we purchased OTOR, I think it had capex to depreciation about 15 million euros a year. We actually said at the time that we needed a little bit more investment. We saw sort of 20 to 22 million euros for the first 3 years of ownership. We factored that into all our returns models. So I'm just really reflecting in terms of the current guidance, the acquisition of OTOR. It will be slightly higher for the next 3 years.
Okay.
And then thought come back.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Well, look, I know everybody's time's short. There are no more questions. I'd just like to thank everybody for sparing the time to come see us today and listen to our presentation. I'd be as excited as we are about the future. And we look forward to seeing you on the Capital Markets Day, or failing that, at our next, the full year results, later on in 2011. Thank you, everybody.